Several of you have asked me questions that are really good questions that I have no possibility of giving enough time to really answer. So I have a website. This is my website. It's just my name, nayaswamiasha.org. I have been teaching, as Devendra mentioned, for many years, and I have taught many classes on many, many subjects, and almost all of them for many years have been recorded, either audio or video. And through this website, you can find them. They're very well organized. And I've given, for example, like a year-long course based on Swami Kriyananda's lessons. I called it Using the Yogic Power of Manifestation, How to Manifest. That's not exactly the name, but the power of manifestation, yogic principles for success and happiness. And the subject is enormous, and I spent many weeks of classes. All of this is free. All you need is to have access to a computer and the ability to download it. There's also this book, which I highly recommend. It's called Money Magnetism. I know some of you came specifically for the subject of material prosperity, which I will try to touch on in the time we have left. But also, this is Swami Kriyananda's book. Pardon me? This book is highly recommended. Plus, from this website, you'll find that I've given a whole course based on this book, plus individual seminars. So you can go much farther in. And all of this, I mean, this is me talking, but what I'm really telling you is what Swami Kriyananda teaches on these subjects. Many years ago, Swami Kriyananda himself would teach all these classes. And more recently, he teaches in a different way, and the responsibility for all of this is on us. I also put my email address there because several of you asked me questions also and wanted to correspond. I'm always on my computer and I write to lots of people. I'm very happy to hear from you. Some of you feel more comfortable asking questions privately, and I'm more than happy to do that. So I had a few cards, but I vastly underestimated how many I would need, so they're all gone already, but the information is there. Okay?
Is this books available online?
The books are not online, but the courses based on the books are online. The books are all available here. You have books available in India that are not available in America, so you have everything you need right here. Could be. Very good. I'm taking home lots of books in my suitcase. All right. I was asked a number of very good questions that were very close to the same question during the break, and so I wanted to really start at that point. The question I'm going to... Is that an eraser? Okay. Well, everybody who needs to know that knows that now, I presume, and so I'll just take it off. if you just Google Nayaswami Asha, it will lead you to everything. That's all you have to remember. Let me focus now on how the question was asked. When we're trying to determine what right action is and what action is going to bring success, whether we're talking spiritually, in our relationships, or financially, the word that I think is the best word to use is the word appropriate. The problem we get into with spiritual life is we get involved in dogmas and we begin to think this is how I'm supposed to behave. For example, even the example I was giving you about trying to relate to my husband in the right way. You know, as husbands and wives, we all know that this is an ongoing story that we all act out, and everyone in our family. Sometimes we get the idea that I'm supposed to be nice. I'm supposed to be obedient. I'm supposed to be quiet. You know, I'm supposed to be cooperative. But oftentimes people find over a long period of time that they're not flourishing just by following external rules. So the issue is not so much how you're manifesting. The issue is what is the core energy inside of you, and is that energy appropriate for where we're really trying to go. I was raised in a household, and I am very grateful to my parents, But my father especially really did not like any kind of conflict. Now, my American upbringing is so different than your Indian upbringing that you just have to bear with me in this. We're raised differently. But my father was very averse to any kind of conflict. And I grew up believing that if you spoke your mind too strongly and people disagreed with you, that perhaps the world would end. That was pretty much what I thought. Hard to believe looking at me now, but nonetheless, it was actually the truth. And I justified that by saying that I was very nice. I was always harmonious and I was so nice. But I began to realize, and now we have to talk about vrittis for a minute. Vritti means whirlpool, and a whirlpool is usually circulating around a center point. If you think of a whirlpool in a river, there's usually a log jam somewhere in the middle, and the current of the river gets sucked into that log jam, and it literally swirls around it. Vritti is a moving force of a whirlpool, and the whirlpool always has a center. And that center point could be the fear of death. That center point could be the memory of a baby that died and the constant fear that your child is going to die. It could be a life in which you were terribly disfigured and then you're always embarrassed about your face. Could be a lifetime I mentioned yesterday, a lifetime that someone told me that they thought I lived, where I was abandoned as a child in a railroad station. Whether true or not, these things you can see, such a trauma, such an experience, or I was very, very happy, you know, as a wife and a mother, and I just want to be a wife and a mother. That's really what makes me happy. Everything about my life is to be a wife and a mother. There's always a center point around which many other decisions are made. This is what a vritti is. So every time we do something, we create a vritti. It's because there's some center point, and then energy is trapped around it. Depending how powerful that first impulse is and how much energy we put behind it determines how powerful that vritti is. Now, the vritti? Yeah, I know, because my accent and yours is different. Vritti. Sometimes when I pronounce Sanskrit words, my Indian friends laugh at me. That's the only word I can say. So I do my best. So are we connected here? Whirlpool. Okay? The point is, there are many ways to get rid of these whirlpools, which are the seeds of karma. These are the seeds of karma. Because the whirlpool is trapped like that, energy keeps getting drawn into it. Now, it can either get drawn into what we want. Now, there's a few factors here. Bearing in mind that the purpose of our life is not just to live it. It's not just to act out whatever impulses we have. It's to progress from a more contracted state of consciousness, from a more limited understanding, into a higher state of understanding. Now, the ego itself, from our perspective, our idea of what's good in life is if it's pleasant and if it's easy. If you think about what's good, it's pleasant and it's easy. And that also means that the people around me are having a pleasant experience and they're having an easy experience. Our idea of bad is when it is unpleasant and when it is difficult. Okay. Now, from the point of view of the ego, who has a limited perspective about as big as a mouse, that's how we think is good. Now, imagine your own children. Your child says, "I want to have chocolate cake for breakfast this morning." And mother says, "Dear, you won't grow up strong if you have chocolate cake for breakfast." And the child answers with infallible wisdom, "Yes, I will." Okay? And the reason the child says, "Yes, I will," is because having chocolate cake is pleasant and easy, right? And it declares that it knows all of reality. Now, if you really love your child, you're not going to let him have chocolate cake for breakfast every morning. It'll rot his teeth and he won't grow properly and he'll become spoiled and a thousand other things. And he may hate that. You know, he may have a temper tantrum about it. He may be mad at you every morning, but you don't care. You don't like that he's unhappy, but it's not appropriate to allow his ignorance, no matter how emotionally committed he is, to be the guiding force. Now I'll stand up. Here is Divine Mother, and she's watching us, and we say the equivalent of, I want to have chocolate cake for breakfast. I want to be rich. I want to have money without effort. I want to not have to pay off my karma. I just want it to be pleasant and easy. And Divine Mother says, you know, that's interesting, and I'm sorry you feel that way, but it's not at all appropriate for me to give that to you. Because if I give that to you, you will never grow up strong. Because what does the kindergarten child know about its future? What does the unrealized devotee, no matter how sincere, know about our own potential? We just don't have the capacity to know our own potential. So Divine Mother guides us like a loving mother would. Now, the appropriate relationship for us to have with our Divine Mother, and I've moved a little off the vrittis, but I'll come back, is that we also need to be very honest. You know, if your child merely buries his or her feelings and never trusts you enough to tell you, then the relationship is not going to work. But after the child courageously and honestly expresses himself, it's still up to the parent wisely to say, I understand how you feel, but this is what we're going to do. So we need to become very honest in ourselves, in our relationship to our Divine Mother. We may say, I think this is the most terrible idea that I have ever heard, and this is nothing that I want. There's an extremely famous moment in the life of Jesus Christ when he was about to be crucified, and he's in the garden praying the night before the crucifixion comes, and he prays, Lord, let this cup pass from me, meaning I don't want to drink of this cup. Let it go away. So he says that. And his prayer was not for himself to escape it, but what he wanted was for the misunderstanding and the hatred of the people to be resolved. That was the bitter cup he had to drink, was their rejecting of what he offered him. But after he said that, he said, but thy will, not mine, be done. Now, I've always felt that if Jesus could be that honest, then we can say pretty much anything we want to say. So it's fine to say, this is a terrible test, Lord. This is nothing that I wanted. This is an agony for me. This is not right. But if this is what you sent me, then let me see what I can make good of it. Just every human relationship is a practice for the divine. And so we find ourselves now... Because what's trying to happen here is we have these vrittis in the spine that we are clinging to, these ideas of what's going to make me happy, what's lastingly real, and who am I? And Divine Mother says, but you're defining yourself by just a minute fraction of your potential. You know, I have to get you out of that so that you can expand into something even greater. And so she works to somehow dissolve these vrittis. She dissolves them in two ways. Either she gives us what we want, or she doesn't give us what we want. Because we can learn both ways. We can learn by having terrible things happening to us and responding with an expanded attitude and then discovering a self-definition and a reality that's much bigger than we thought because we didn't get what we want. Or we get exactly what we want, and we discover that it doesn't really make us as happy as we thought it would. And then, therefore, also, all of this energy circulating around this thought is freed up. Or we can do it with Kriya Yoga, and we increase the flow of the river through Kriya Yoga, and then the vortices and all the vritti is just drawn into the river because the flow is strong. You see, that's how Kriya works. I explained that last night. Oh, if the flow of the river is strong, all the whirlpools are automatically swept into it. And that's how Kriya can just cut through the whole system and completely shift our consciousness. Kriya is a specific practice, but the power of it is the devotion to God and the upward expansive moving. You don't even have to be devoted to God. You just have to be moving in an expansive direction and increasing that flow of energy. Now, coming back to this question of what is appropriate, I was asked this question in two ways. One was someone was saying to me that they feel very repressed and find it very difficult to express themselves, and that's where I was starting with my own life experience. So I was manifesting as a very nice person. But the center that came out for me as being nice was total fear. Okay? So you ask the question, is it desire, is it intention, is it attachment? It's the actual vibration that you're putting out. Everyone could praise me for being harmonious, but what I was registering in my chakras time and time again was fear. Now, fear is not an expansive quality. Fear is excessive self-concern, self-preoccupation, lack of trust in myself, lack of trust in the way the world would respond. We can make a very long line. And every time I did what looked right, from my point of view, I was actually doing what was wrong. Because I was contracted, and I was too afraid to be expansive. You see? Now, for me, now what you have to do is you have to, and this is another principle that you need to know, you have to practice when it is easier. Okay? There were people in my life I really needed to speak honestly to, and there was no way I was going to speak honestly to them. So I started practicing when it was easier. Here's the American life. I was living in New York City. In New York City for a summer. I only lived there for a summer. People in New York are very rude as a rule. There's probably an equivalent here in India, but I don't know the city. People in California are very mellow. People in New York are very rude. So I got to practice speaking out in New York City when no one even thought it was odd. I could be very brash and very outspoken, and I practiced just talking to store clerks. I practiced talking to other customers in the store who cut in line in front of me. You know, I practiced talking to bank tellers, to taxi drivers, because I had to get over this fear. I had to break out. I had to find out what happened when I expanded beyond that and started practicing being something else. And gradually I discovered that, you know, nothing much happens. You just speak your mind and people answer you and you answer them. And then something happened. I began to enjoy being rude. And when I began to enjoy being rude, then I was able to make a free will choice about how I wanted to behave. I was no longer compelled by my fear. I could now do what was right because I knew it was right. And I recreated myself in this manner. I wasn't yet doing Kriya, but I was on the path in this, moving in this direction. Does that make sense? So what is right is what is appropriate. What is right is what is appropriate to bring expanded consciousness to yourself and to everyone else involved. Now, what we have to understand is that each one of us is equally important to God. Your mother, your father, your children, your father-in-law, they're all important, but not more important than you. Everybody, and this is, we have to become impersonal enough. So it's not merely that we sacrifice ourselves. That's one of those things where it might look good, but the core of sacrificing yourself might be very contractive. If the core of self-sacrifice is really very expansive, that's different. But what really matters is what's the center of the vritti, not merely what it looks like. So we have to just look impersonally, and sometimes he has to sacrifice for me because that's just what's appropriate at this time. His desire is more selfish, and even if he's strong and has a position in the family or in the business, it's just not appropriate, because it's not really going to take us toward higher consciousness. Now, appropriate, practice when it's easier, what is really at the center of the vritti, what is really the core issue, and is it expansive or contractive for you? for you are really the issues. You know, other people at the center of their niceness, and some of my friends that I've learned a great deal from, is this extraordinary, compassionate understanding of everybody's reality. And their niceness is extremely expansive. You know, mine was fear-based. So for them, it was exactly right. It's what's really at the center of the vritti. Okay? Does that make sense to everyone? Are there any questions or thoughts about that? Yeah. Okay. Any questions? All right. Now, let me just focus for a minute here. All right. Because some of you have really specifically wanted to know more about financial prosperity, I want to spend a couple of minutes working on that. But what we have to understand, I'm just going to shift over completely to that issue for a few minutes here. Let me look at a couple of notes I have. What we have to understand about financial prosperity is that, and this is the it's a combined subject, that everything that happens to us in life is just a question of the magnetism that we have and the magnetism that we put out. So if your specific issue is how to respond appropriately to the financial needs in your life and the karma that you have, you know, the capacity to attract money is a specific karmic condition, but it's a karmic condition that can be affected by the same principles that we're talking about here. That what we're really trying to do is we're trying to move appropriately in an expansive direction. The most important thing we have to understand about everything in life is that everything in life is just a question of energy. And it's the quality and the quantity of energy. I learned this very well from my husband, who was a very good teacher to me in this respect. He has a karmic facility with money. He understands how it works. And he's just very comfortable with that. But his facility with money, I realized when I married him, came from his understanding of the quality of energy. And in his mind, the way he works with business or with everything that he does, everything to him is the same. When I married him, I had this very split idea in my mind between the spiritual life and the material life. And I described to you how impoverished I was. And I loved being impoverished. It just didn't mean anything to me. I had no interest in money, and I delighted in being impoverished. In fact, I was a little bit afraid to not be poor. Because as long as I was poor, I felt pretty sure that I was spiritual. And to him, it was just like, rich or poor, what difference does it make? He understood it's all energy. And Swami Kriyananda played with my mind on this. In complicated circumstances, he wanted us to build a little house near where he lived. He wanted us to live near in his neighborhood and so on. And we didn't have any money to build that house at first. He sent me out to teach. That's how he got me to go out and teach. Well, you could just go out and earn money teaching, and then you could build the house. So anyway, we started building this house by various means. We managed to collect the money we needed. But I was terrified to build the house, because if I had a nice home, that would be certain that I wasn't spiritual anymore. My husband having none of these complexes, so I decided, well, then we'll build an ugly house. That'll be the solution. He, of course, felt if you're going to do anything, you should do it well. And even though it was a humble home, he was going to build it nicely. And I kept just thwarting his efforts. And finally, he turned to me and he said, if you're not going to help, would you at least get out of the way? At which point, I sort of began to see what I was thinking. And what I understood from him is that you respond appropriately to the energy requirements of every situation. And if you have material needs, you respond appropriately to them. And the rules that you apply are exactly the same rules that you apply to everything else. You think in terms of expansive, not contractive. You put out energy. You pray to God. I'm going to be more sensible with it in just a moment. But what I was going to say is, Everything is a flow of energy. And if you think of money as some fixed object that's really quite different than everything else, then you're always confused in relationship to it. And also, the great mistake that people make is they think that money is something different than your own energy. And we don't understand that everything that we bring to us is the result of the magnetism and the energy that we ourselves put out. Does that make sense? I live in Silicon Valley, and we've been able to build a temple there or buy a temple and make a very nice situation. One of the reasons we've been able to, it's all been supported by the devotees who are there. And the devotees there are very generous to the spiritual work, because in that area where people are so creative, they understand that money is the result of the application of creative energy, and that it's the creative energy that is the wealth that they have. I mean, of course, it's an ideal place to find that, because people are always making things out of nothing. That's what people do there. People have careers. What do? I work for startups, is what they say. You know, a startup is a company that's just getting going. They love to be where we're making something that wasn't there before. And they understand that if as long as we have creative energy, we're always going to also have a flow of money. When I asked Swami Kriyananda once, what is the secret of prosperity? His answer was one word, and that word was creativity. He said, it's the willingness to say, well, that didn't work, let me try something else. Well, that didn't work, let me try something else. And that didn't work, let me try something else. And as long as we are in touch with that willingness to continually put out energy and to always be expanding our idea of how to put out that energy, then we're in the flow that sooner or later brings money to us. If it's your karma to do so, not everybody succeeds financially, but we can at least progress in the right direction. The other thing I've observed with people is that, and this I also learned from my husband, who was very successful prior to coming to Ananda and after coming to Ananda, he worked harder than anybody I'd ever seen. We tend to think that money is owed to us, and because we don't understand it as energy, we don't recognize that you have to put out a lot of energy to have money. And that doesn't necessarily mean, depending on your circumstances in life, you may have a very humble job. But everything that we do, we have to do with full creative energy, because that is what prosperity is: energy, creativity. And if we begin to understand that my power to manifest is not separate from who I am. In my own life, I rarely have to think about money. It's just not, I'm not a businesswoman, it's not the work that I do. But I'm completely comfortable with the fact that whatever I need, I know I can manifest it, and throughout my entire life, it's always come to me, because I'm always creative and I'm always energetic. And I recognize that it's not separate from me. It's not separate from who I am. Now, we get caught in all kinds of ways. Let me just... So what we have to work with in our financial lives is the same thing we have to work within our spiritual life, which is that energy is the result of willpower. Yesterday, those of you were here learning the energization exercises, and if you want to stay this afternoon, you can learn the beginning of them again. Energization exercises, it's how we get more energy. It's how we draw that energy from the infinite. It's how we direct it toward the object of our concentration. The energization exercises that Yogananda taught as a support for Kriya Yoga are a valuable key to financial prosperity. Because what is it that causes us not to have enough money? We run out of energy, isn't that so? We're just bored with our work and we do a crummy job, we fail in one way and we don't know how to start over again, we're just at a loss as to how to apply new consciousness to the situation we're in. The more we have of willpower, the energy in the universe is infinite, and we can be an infinite channel. The more we practice energization exercises, which you can learn here, the more we get in the habit of knowing, well, I've met a block, so let me be energetic about how I can solve this. Now, sometimes we just find ourselves in circumstances that we can't change. And we have to learn how to be creative within those circumstances. We have responsibilities, we have limited education, we have limited opportunities. We're just not able to just, you know, in America we've been able to walk away and start over many times, but our economy too is beginning to collapse. And it's not as easy for us to live the way that we've been accustomed to living. So then we have to bring into the subject of prosperity all the same spiritual principles. You know, if this is where God has planted me, then obviously there's something here that I need to learn. Karma is unlearned lessons. That's all it is. It's just unlearned lessons. There's something that I don't understand about always being in a state of God awareness and bliss. And so circumstances have been given to me that are going to allow me to learn how to be joyful and God aware even now. So no matter what we're facing, if we see it, if God doesn't give me a way out of it, then my freedom must lie through it. And the more we can just simply say yes to life, is how Swami puts it, just say yes. And we don't necessarily say yes to every request that's given to us. But a tremendous amount of energy is lost in a state of rebellion against the circumstances God has given us. Think how much energy we lose just wishing things were different. And if we could harness all that energy toward a positive expression, even of just acceptance, then the dynamism that we free is energy, and that energy translates, if it's needed, into financial success as well. So we don't necessarily say, yes, this is a wonderful circumstance, but we say, yes, okay, Lord, if you're not going to free me of this, then I'm going to face it with as much courage and as much positive energy as I can, and then you go to, you're as expansive as you can. You're not perfect, but you're not going to get out of it until you face it. You don't get out of something. Well, this is partly what I realized about that house. Swamiji said it to me. You don't get out of karma by doing it badly. That was my thought. Well, I'll just do it badly. Swamiji said to me, you don't get out of karma by doing it badly. By, in other words, by being rebellious and unhappy about this. Oh, I'm a householder. I have to earn money. I'd rather be a spiritual person, but I just don't have time to meditate. So I have to go to work every day, and then I have to take care of this family and this house. I mean, how much magnetism is there in that? And how pleased do you think Divine Mother is to say, look, I gave you all these opportunities, and how are you dealing with them? It's fair to say, as long as you ask me to do this, I'll do it. But the moment you free me, I'll be very happy. But still, you find some way to say yes. Willpower, a better word for that, is willingness. And the willingness is, I'm willing to learn. I was telling some of you after class yesterday at the end, my parents, when they became elderly and they needed care, my mother was physically ill. My father became a little mentally unclear, as older people do. And much of the responsibility of caring for them fell on me. They didn't live with me. They lived at a distance, but I had to visit them often and take care of their lives. I became extremely agitated for a period of time about the circumstances of their life. And then I had to apply my own philosophy. You know, we all fall away from this at moments. And I realized they were in a position, they were having the exact karma that they needed to have. You know, everything in their life had led them right to that point. How could it be wrong what was happening to them now? But of course, they were, to my mind, not as happy as they could be. But I had to say, Divine Mother, you're trying to teach them something. But I was not at peace with that. So my prayer was, Divine Mother, whatever it is that they're supposed to learn, you need to help them learn it. And you need to help them learn it very quickly, because I'm running out of endurance here. But that's a very good prayer for ourselves also. When we find ourselves in a circumstance where our energy is contracted because we're having to deal with things that we don't know how to deal with, You just say, Divine Mother, whatever it is you're trying to teach me, you're going to help me learn it. And if we're beginning to sink under the weight of it, I don't understand what this lesson is. You have to tell me. And then we have the willingness to learn. We have the willingness to be taught. You know, creativity is the secret of prosperity. We need to try to go forward in the best possible way. Now, we make a lot of mistakes about money also, because money being so powerful, we imagine it can do things that it can't do. We imagine it can buy friendship. We imagine it can make us secure from the vagaries of life. We imagine it can create self-worth. And so we have to understand that money itself is just an inert object, and no thing can give us consciousness. I had this experience where we bought a new carpet for our house, and it was a very big, complicated thing to get the carpet. It took a lot of energy, and we finally got the carpet, and the carpet was put down in the house, and I looked at it, and I tried to be happy. I tried to draw happiness from the carpet. And the carpet is a dead object. It just sat there. You know, I could love it, but it did not love me back. And I just realized, you know, which I know pretty much anyway, but it was such a dramatic example, that what gives us satisfaction is living consciousness. And if we enjoy money as a flow of energy, because of what it enables us to do, and if we concentrate more on what it is that we want to do with it, in other words, we want to create a loving family, we want to create a harmonious home, we want to share with others, we want to support a spiritual work, we want to provide appropriately for our children. Yogananda says, however, he says, it's very dangerous to satisfy desires, to help people satisfy desires when they haven't put out the energy to create that satisfaction for themselves. He actually says, don't give your money to your children. He said, because then they will have the satisfaction of their desires without ever having generated the energy to achieve it. I inherited some money from my father, so I'm glad Yogananda never told him that. That's one of the reasons I'm able to be here with all of you. It's my travel fund right here. It's my father's legacy, is the ability to travel. But nonetheless, and if we ourselves live in that thought, you know, that if these desires are satisfied, but if we concentrate on the flow of energy behind it and what we're trying to achieve, I'm in this office, I want to be a good worker. I'm in this office, I want to help the other people in my office. I have this work to do, I want to overcome my laziness and my lack of attention to detail. And then we do that work, then everything else comes as a consequence, because we're following the right karmic laws. Another factor that we have to always understand with money is you always have to put first things first. You know, we think that, you know, I'll buy this and I'll buy that, but you know, you have to give to the source of your spiritual inspiration. The tradition in the West is tithing, which is 10% of everything that you earn goes to whatever the source of your spiritual inspiration is. I understand in India people are less inclined to support the spiritual works. They think that ashram should be free. I'm not quite sure where that thought comes from, and I'm not sure to what extent any of you in this room endorse it. Where do you think it's going to be supported from? You know, who do you think is going to support it? And how do you think that will benefit you if you don't give back to it? In America, we have the tradition, which by no means everybody follows, that the first 10% of everything I earn goes to the source of my spiritual inspiration. Thank you, God, for giving me anything. Tithing is a percentage giving is a tremendous way to do it, because if you have $1, you give one penny. If you have $1 million, you know, you give $100,000, but you only give that 10% of what you have. But when you put first things first, when you really say that everything in my life is a gift from God and I give it back to the source of my inspiration. There's a joke, oh, well, you give money to God, well, you just gather up all the rupees and you throw them in the air And whatever he wants, he'll take, and whatever falls back to the ground is yours. These methods don't work. So we say the source of my inspiration, the first thing I do is I give back to that. Because you see, that's also an act of confidence that God is taking care of you. That's really saying that I don't have to hoard this because the money is a flow, the ideas will come to me, the opportunities will be there if I also give back in the right way. When we debt is simply having desires that are bigger than your energy. And prosperity is having energy that's bigger than your desires. And people act as if you can affirm wealth by spending money. And it's kind of goofy, because that's really saying that energy just comes, that money just comes from nowhere. You have to know it's the result of your own energy, but then put your energy out in the right way. Now, these are a little bit, of an overview. But what I'm really trying to say is that the secrets of financial wealth are the secrets of karma, the secrets of spiritual success. It's all the same attitudes, because it's all energy. My husband, I dragged him from time to time to an astrologer or various person who would, sort of talk to us about our life. Naturally, we have interest in these things. I'm not a follower of astrology or anything, but I know it's a true science, and on occasion I've been helped by that. But I took him to one or two readings. He finally looked at me, and it was such a perfect answer. First, he said, "Let's not waste money on this anymore." He said, "Every day I get up and I do the very best I can with that day." He said, "I don't need to know anything else. I look at every situation as God-given, my opportunity to be more expansive in my thinking, to be more creative in my relationship, to be more willing, to practice the principles that I know, and at the end of the day, I've just done the best that I can, and then that day goes away. What difference does it make?" And if we concentrate on the energy flow and having the right consciousness in that energy, quality and quantity of energy, then really everything else takes care of itself. It's really remarkably so that it does. And if we don't, then the flow gets confused. Now, questions or thoughts or comments on that or anything else that I've said so far in this hour? Yes.
The very fact that the energy is so much, so powerful, how do we accept the reality that the energy is being wasted? Because even if you're wasting energy, still it is going to get fulfilled again.
Wasted meaning that you might be doing work that isn't appreciated or not going in a good direction, or?
What I'm saying, you're saying that we have to qualitative energy, you're saying.
Yeah, quality and quantity.
So, can we differentiate something not qualitative, something qualitative? Energy is something what?
Energy is neutral. It's just a force. Quality is determined by if it is expansive for your consciousness. Okay, that's the quality of energy, expansive for your consciousness. And what's expansive for your consciousness can be very complicated. It's a very personal question. The other word that's important is, as I said earlier, is directional. You just have to be going in the right direction. If you have a job, let's use an example, that doesn't pay well and you don't like it, you may be crabby every single day that you go to work. And you may feel completely justified in being crabby, and maybe your boss is an idiot. You know, I mean, these things happen. You have a boring job with an idiot boss and you're underpaid. So every single day you're in a bad mood. And every single day you put out less and less energy, and you're not at all creative in what you're doing, and you're not a loving person, and you're angry when you get home. How is this expansive for you? And if God has trapped you there, and no matter how you try, you can't get out of it, then we have to go all the way back to what we were talking about this morning, which is how our karma brings us to a certain point. And then we have to work with that and from that towards something else. So you have to change the quality first of your own energy, because like attracts like. If you're sitting there crabby, unproductive, and uncreative, where do you think a solution is going to come from? What in your magnetism is going to create a solution for you? We always have the opportunity to change our own consciousness. And that to me is the good news. It's always under our control. Is it easy? I started out, remember? This is neither easy nor a quick solution or for the faint of heart. Self-realization is a serious teaching.
Just yeah. Add to that, sometimes, you know, you are talking about the crappy job with no creativity, uh-huh. It still gives more money. What happens to that?
You have to evaluate. The question is, what if you get a lot of money for the bad job with a terrible boss? You have to ask, what is expansive and what is contractive for you? If you have family obligations, if you have children who are relying on you, people you have to put through college, it may not be expansive for you to abandon those responsibilities. So then you find your expansive satisfaction in serving the needs of others. But then you have to work within yourself often to not resent what you've been asked to do, because you may be behaving nicely and doing all the right things, but the center of the vritti is resentment for having to help others. So then whatever the actual solution is for you, you have to begin to work that out. And it may not be a change of consciousness, I mean of circumstance. It may only be a change of consciousness.
Is my understanding correct? What you're trying to say is it is okay to do that kind of a work if there is an obligation to deliver somewhere where it is going to be possible?
Yes. I mean, you have to be, okay. Money is also about common sense. You know, we can't just be foolish about this. Oh, I'm just going to go off and do what I love, and, you know, do what you love and you'll go bankrupt. You have to also take into account the karmic conditions that life has given you. And the reason I started this class by talking about karma in that way is so that we cannot rebel against what's given to us, but recognize that where I am is exactly the situation I created myself. Whatever the lessons, however difficult, the only way out of this is to learn them. And to learn them is to recognize that Divine Mother is in charge. And even if I want chocolate cake every day for breakfast, it's not going to help me. Somehow this is going to help me, even if I don't know how. Does that make sense? Yes.
I would like to ask a contradictory question. What if I am in a job in which I love, and I do very creative job, and I put my entire energy and soul into it, but still I am not rewarded properly?
You're not rewarded.
What's right?
The secret of prosperity is creativity. You have to keep looking for another solution. It depends on whether the degree of your reward is within your own capacity to influence. I think the answer would have to be more personal. Are there other opportunities within the realm of what you're doing that could increase income for you? Can you begin another subsidiary enterprise over here that will increase income for you? Is there a way that you can appropriately make your contribution known that somebody can give to you? Or do you have to accept that God doesn't give us everything, that at least I have work I love, and I'm just going to have to live more humbly because that's the karmic situation I'm in, and that we just have to make choices between those two. Do I sacrifice work I love in order to have more money? What is the lesson? What is God trying to teach me here? How can I tune in? And you don't answer that question quickly. You go into as still a state of meditation as you can, and you ask, okay, Lord, why are you doing this to me? And you don't say it, Lord, why are you doing this to me? You say, why are you doing this to me? Just the way you would say to your mother, Mother, why are you asking me to do this? It doesn't make any sense to me. Clearly, it should be different. And If you carefully attune yourself, somehow it has a way of working out. You may not get rich. You may never be rich. It might not be your karma to do so. may just be for your children to become rich, or maybe they won't either. It's just the way it's going to be. But when you die, if you can say, I lived correctly, you'll have wealth far, far greater. The inconvenience of this life is a moment. Right consciousness is forever. What is lastingly real? Who am I? Where does my happiness come from? It all becomes an integrated whole. Any others?
Sometimes we act out of peer pressure. Like, I feel I have enough, but my wife doesn't think so. or the peer, there's a peer pressure within the environment. So you think that your peers, you are not doing as well as your peers, and you might become an object of say, ridicule. So you have to try more, and you're going one direction, you're going another direction.
Well,
so I really don't know how to.
If you go to my website, I have lots of classes about marriage. The question is, what is true? In Swami Kriyananda's commentary on the Bhagavad Gita, which is really one of the greatest books he has written, and that's saying a lot because they're great books he's written, he talks about the necessity for excellence in our personal lives. This has actually been a little bit of a question for me. If it's all a dream, if we're just here living for, you know, if what happens in this world doesn't really matter, why should we try so hard to be excellent at what we do? And intuitively, I've always known you should try hard to be excellent. But Swami just put it just perfectly, put it in terms of the gunas, which I'm not really going to go in great length there, but because often the reason that we don't have greater success is because we're too lazy. And I'm not saying that to you at all, sir. This is incidental that you asked the question. But often, we are not using our full potential. And therefore, the fact that we're not making very much money, for an example, or being a success, is actually a sign that we're not doing what we should be doing. Now, this gentleman says he's working creatively, he loves what he's doing, and it doesn't pay very much. But you have to ask yourself, am I living at 100% of my potential? Because if you're not, you're shrinking. And so if, in fact, the reason one is not getting the income one's wife wants you to have is because I'm just not working hard enough. Or if the wife is unreasonable, or the husband is unreasonable, because it's all of them, and I am doing, you know, exactly what I ought to be doing as well as I can do it, then you have to be strong enough in yourself not to allow your life to be dictated by wrong expectations of you. And no, that's a very, very tricky issue to answer.
No, I understand, but my thing is, there are two things here. You never know what is 100%. You never know that.
100%.
Yeah, what 100% is. Because you're trying to improve and improve all the time.
You try to improve it all the time. And it's because it's a matter of your consciousness. You don't want to be in tamasic energy. You know, tamasic energy clouds your spiritual consciousness. And since most of us can't meditate all day, we have to do something else. And we have to do that as at the highest level of manifestation that we can, because that's where we're going. We're going to become infinite in our potential. And so all of these things we're doing, these are exercises, just like the energization exercises. I practice in my work being concentrated, creative, expansive, determined, and able to channel as much energy as possible. And if I've done it badly, I need to fix it and do it well. For no reason at all, except it's the right consciousness for me. And then at the end of this incarnation, I will be somewhere that I want to be, instead of just having finished. And in wherever you are, whatever you're doing, you always have that chance. You know, how shall I do this little thing? Whatever little thing it is, if you're making dinner for your family, you can make it badly or you can make it well. If you're cleaning your bedroom, you can do it badly or do it well. If you're inventing a new solar power system, you can do it badly or you can do it well. And the result accrues to you as vrittis in the spine. and you really want those vrittis to be dynamic and forward and expansive. So when your wife tells you you need more money, you have to stand back for a moment and say, is that her false desire speaking, or is God telling me that I need to act with greater strength? And when you can look at that more clearly, then you decide what is the right thing to do. Fair enough? Good question. The other side of it is, and this is a real truth, you know, Yogananda says you should be very financially ambitious for the sake of doing good in the world. And especially doing good to support spiritual work, you know, so that all those ashrams which are now free because somebody paid for them somewhere, then you can help pay for them. You know, that you can give, you can use your energy. If you have to earn money, then first things first. Take a percentage of it off and give it to good works. Help.
That's where yeah. I have a very fundamental question. So
say again?
The fundamental question of money and where the money is required for the spirituality or
right.
Ashram, whatever that you're talking about. Right, where we had Ramana Maharishi and other people lived here, they never had any money to do anything. They
did right.
And they won't. If the master is so powerful, so he can make the things happen the way he wants, right? We don't need a very luxury hermitage or something else, monastery, where people can come and do the stuff. So why the importance of money comes into the spirituality? So
because we need to give. It's very simple. It's for the sake of the disciples. Why do people, I don't want to, I mean, I know I'm walking into a can of big thing here, but let me put it this way. Why do we withhold our money? We withhold our money because we think we don't have enough. We don't trust that we can earn more. We want to spend it on our own smaller needs. You know, we take care of our children and we take care of ourselves because we define that as our responsibility. So why would we not be responsible also for providing spirituality to other people? It's for us. It's for our sake entirely, and 100% entirely. You know, and because it makes us work harder, and it ties us to what we're doing. If you only passively receive something.
No, I agree totally yeah. with you of giving it to the poor person, the person who is in suffering and trying to make them leave the stuff. I'm not saying that whatever money I need is all for me.
Right, of course.
So when the spirituality can spread without money, is it not possible that's what is money?
Can spirituality not spread without money? Yogananda said very simply, every good, noble, or philanthropic work sooner or later comes down to a matter of money. People have to be fed, buildings have to be purchased, buildings have to be supported, publicity has to be passed out. The hall where you all saw Swami Kriyananda had to be paid for, the posters had to be put on the buses. You know, one has to stop and ask for a moment, do I want to be part of making that happen? You know, or not. It's your choice. What do I want to do with my energy? Because your money is just your energy. How you spend your money, look at how you spend your money. You know, asking the question about prosperity. Look at how you spend your money. Look at the things in the house. Look at the places that you go. Look at it, what your monthly bills are. Just there you are. That's a picture of what's important to you. So just look at it and say, does this really represent who I want to be? And if it doesn't, then we need to shift our magnetism to show more that we're behaving to be the person that we want to be. There is no difference between spiritual and material. It's all a question of where we put our energy. And because money is such a big deal, where we spend our money is an extremely clear expression of who we think we are. So if we meditate for an hours every day, but never give any money to a spiritual cause, then we're giving some of our energy, but not all of it, or not as much as might be appropriate. So what is happening in the world right now is that spirit is entering all spheres. You know, there used to be this, as I was saying yesterday about Kali Yuga, there used to be this big division between material and spiritual. Now it's all coming together. Prosperity in one area is prosperity in all areas. And part of what, and I'm getting close to the end of my time here, part of what I really want to say is it's all the same energy. Take care of your consciousness. Take care of where you put your energy and do it in a God-centered, expansive way, and everything else will follow from that. Every other area of your life will also come into order, and what you're looking for will be yours. Yes, sir.
Yeah, you rightly explained, you were explaining it just now, that money is manifested by energy, or money is energy, and you should share for the society. So the money is energy, and it comes also from spirituality, right?
Right.
The energy. So people who are corrupt also, they have also a lot of money. So they must be highly spiritual.
No, that's actually, it's a very good question. You're offering it as sort of a joke, but it's a very good question. Yeah, you know, if people are corrupt and also have money, that means they have a lot of energy. Because we do not develop in a straight line. We do not develop everything at the same time. Anybody who can manifest power in some way has learned certain principles. And he's learned the same principles. If he then uses that capacity to manifest in a downward moving evil way, he will lose the capacity to manifest. Maybe not in the incarnation that you're watching, but sooner or later, if he abuses what he's gained and uses it in a bad way, then he won't have it anymore. This man has corrupt power now, but you know, you see the others who are, they're impotently unable to get money or power and furiously enraged about it. How do you think they got there? Often it's because they abused it in past lives. Merely because someone has gotten a certain amount of good karma together and has allowed this to happen. But then if he throws it away, he throws it away. You have to look at it at the longer. But he does have some power. You're right. He's just not using it properly. Interestingly, someone asked me about Hitler earlier. Hitler, who was, of course, the great villain of the Second World War. In 1935, when Yogananda traveled from America to India, he went through Europe. He tried to arrange to meet Hitler in Germany because he said Hitler had great power, and what he said was it wasn't yet determined whether he would use that power for good or evil. And Master wanted to meet him to see if he could draw him to use that power for good. And the meeting was never possible. Isn't that an interesting fact? That even at that late stage, it was still, you know, he had developed enough in past lives to know how to be a great channel for energy. He was on the cusp of temptation, whether to use it for evil or for good. And obviously he went in an evil direction. And he allowed himself, was also the karma of the country. It wasn't all personal. But so, yeah, you look at, I remember Sri Ramakrishna was visited in his temple by a group of actors and dancers who at that time were considered to be very low-class people. And his disciple Girish Ghosh, who was the playwright in Bengal and so on. But afterwards, some of the more orthodox of his disciples, Ramakrishna's disciples, were outraged that he had entertained these relatively low-class people. And Ramakrishna's answer was perfect. He said, right now, the god they worship is art and music and dance and theater, he said. And yes, there is a higher god to worship, he said, but they know how to worship because they know how to apply all of their energy to that which they seek. And when their goal elevates, that power will be there. And in many ways, they're already more advanced than some pious person who is being really nice and doesn't dare do anything, you know, off the orthodox, but doesn't yet have any capacity to generate energy. And in this way also, when we do our dharma and even try to get very rich, sometimes we learn more than if we're afraid to engage in that reality, because we have to learn our lessons as they're given to us. I think we have hit the end of the allotted time. And as you can see, this is really the beginning of an enormously complicated subject, and I hope at least something of what I've given to you is of help to you today. So, God bless you. This is not the end of our day. We're doing, tell me, Devendra, what are we doing? Tell them, what are we doing?